Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I have a radical idea. We'll cross the streams.
Excuse me, Egon. You said crossing the streams was bad.
Cross the streams.
Hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Crossing Streams, your weekly television streaming podcast out of San Diego, California. Craig Elston back with you. The champagne has dried out of my clothing. My main job, full-time job, has finally gone slightly more dormant as the San Diego Soccer's won a championship. So what that means is now I need to catch up on what feels like an entire closet full of clutter of all the shows that have been piling up and all the discussion topics that have been piling up at Crossing Streams is going to go into overdrive to try and balance out the glut of streaming. But today we are here to talk about a show that I've been watching through all of this storm of content, and that is wrapped up as of last week. So it's going to be a complete season one review. We're going to ask the question, is Outer Range good? And to do so, we're going to welcome back a man who fills the giant hole in my west pasture. That's Ryan Phillips. Welcome back, Ryan.
Greg, that sounded very strange, but it's always great to be here, Craig. I love doing this show with you. You know that. We've reviewed some really good shows in the past, and this might be our weirdest, I would say,
yeah,
that we've dove into.
I would have to agree with that. So yeah, this is an Outer Range full season review. What we're going to do, because we've only had one bite of the apple here, is we'll do it the way Ryan and I have done in podcast past. We're going to have a non-spoiler zone here. So if you haven't watched any, or you've watched a little of Outer Range, the first half of this podcast will be for you. And then we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk through some of the completely wild to maybe absolutely insane spoilers that occur in the final two, especially episodes of the season. So that is the layout for this particular show. If you haven't watched Outer Range, you're still safe, but we will let you know when it is time to jump through the hole back into your other programming and return when you are done. Okay. Because we haven't talked really before, just like, hey, can you do the show with me? Okay, now we're doing the show. What were your thoughts when you started watching this, maybe after an episode or two? And let's just start there. What were your thoughts a couple episodes in?
I thought the role fit Josh Brolin really well. He is that sort of restrained, you know, tough guy thing, kind of down. He might be the go-to guy for that. I thought the acting and everybody placed where they were seemed really well done, but I was just confused. I was straight up confused. I didn't know. I will say they did a good thing, because being so confused, I wanted to see the next one and be like, well, maybe they'll explain it. And then I wanted to see the next one and maybe they'll explain that. Like, so it was a very confusing opening to the show. I think you get the basics of what's going on, and there's sort of this surface level drama between two families. So that's compelling, but there's a whole other thing going on that you're out of touch with. And so I will say after one episode, I wasn't like, this is really good or this is really bad. It was, this is confusing me. But I think that's what the intention was. So I guess it was good at doing what it was supposed to do. But yes, it was a confusing situation. I didn't know how to feel about it.
And I'm very similar. I'll use the word intrigued. That's where I was.
Sure.
Like a couple, three episodes into Outer Ranges, I was really intrigued. I thought I was seeing some fun and then some quirky performances.
Yes.
There was a lot of style going on. You know, right away you kind of come up with a Yellowstone meets Lost type of
that is perfect to describe it. It was sort of this surface level Yellowstone redo But then there's this whole other thing going on with the Dharma Initiative, you know, you know, and you don't know what it even means.
And that's definitely how I felt a couple episodes into Outer Range. And I was they dropped it in 4 2 episode batches. And I was like, you know, I watched two and I was like, I really want to watch the next two. And then I watched the next two and I was like, I really want to watch the next two. So, I asked on Twitter at 619 Sports earlier today for people who watched the show and got some real mixed responses. Honestly, Ryan, including someone going, oh, I was really bored. And I'm like, that blows my mind because I could be bored. Yeah, I could be mad at Outer Range, but there's no way I could be bored at Outer Range.
Yeah. And I will say this, what was compelling about it to me, and you mentioned it, was there were some really good performances. I mean, they got a great cast, first of all. And you figure what kept me going and with a lot of hope moving forward, I was compelled. You're right. I was definitely like, okay, yeah, let's keep going. Let's see it. I definitely swallowed them very quickly. In a row. I started a little bit after it had come out and really went through it pretty fast. But what kept me going is, well, these people who are all really good actors and giving great performances wouldn't have done the show if there wasn't something good about it and something compelling there. And if they didn't, you know, at least get it. And Josh Brolin's not doing TV unless he thinks it's worth doing TV. He doesn't have to do TV. You know, I mean, although actors are aspiring to TV now more, but it just felt like they were really, really good and that it was definitely going to go somewhere. I just didn't know where.
So now, again, in a non-spoilery fashion, and we'll both do this, when you finished episode 8, where was your head at?
I was very surprised at some of the things that happened. I still held on to, I thought the performances were outstanding. I thought there was maybe a little more meat on the bone that they sort of left. And maybe they wanted to be mysterious with it. But I thought there was a little, like, had the finale lasted 20 minutes longer and covered up some more of the loose ends, I would have been good with that. I realize there's sort of an artistic thing of, like, leave the audience wanting more. And I think that's what they sort of erred on that side of. So they did leave a lot open to interpretation. And, I liked it. I liked the show. I do think there was a little more they could have rounded out there at the end. And I'm also curious. I don't know if they're doing a second season or if they have any plans to. It felt like a finale. But I liked it. I look back on it and it was a positive experience. I just feel like maybe I wanted a little more, and maybe that's a good thing. Is it shows that the show was compelling enough that I could have taken a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they have confirmed a season 2 yet. And it'll be interesting to see, and I'm sure it'll be partly, algorithmically dependent, seeing as it's Amazon or any streaming service for that matter, as to whether it gets a season 2. If they don't, then it's very John from Cincinnati almost in terms of a lot of weird mystery and maybe not.
It's a great reference, Greg.
Not going to get the payoff here because I started off, Ryan, saying Yellowstone meets Lost. And then I finished the series saying Yellowstone meets Lost in Twin Peaks.
That works.
And that's where they met because there was a lot of deep weirdness mixed into the show, especially in the Imogene Poots character.
She was so delightful being weird. I thought she was great.
She was carving it. And Josh Brolin gets deeply weird in a couple of scenes that I very much enjoyed. And those were the things I probably liked the most. And by the way, just to spoil the title of the episode, I do think Outer Range is good. I enjoyed it. I definitely watched all the way through. I have some notes.
At no point was I willing to quit this. You know what I mean? At no point was I like, I'm out. You're in it the whole way. You're hoping for this payoff. And you get some of that. And the more I thought about the finale afterward, the more I liked it. But I also do, as I said, I still feel like there's some meat there they could have explored.
Yeah, I mean, if I was intrigued at the beginning, I was definitely a little confused with some parts of the end. They explain some things, you understand some things, and there's others that are clearly being left for a season 2 and a season 3. And presumably they've got an idea of where this thing is going, because we've seen some future flash forwards, right? So they definitely have some idea. But the mix of like sci-fi weird with Twin Peaks trippy with hard Western grit, you know, ranch style drama, I found it to be very interesting and occasionally effective, like not always. And I'll probably go into a couple spots where, but I think generally I found that to be a lot of fun and effective. And I loved seeing Lily Taylor chew it up as a Western matriarch, you know, and yeah. Tom Pelfrey in anything is going to be good. He was good again here.
I'll tell you what he gave. I thought the most grounded performance, as you said, some of the people got really weird. I thought Tom Pelfrey stole scenes. He obviously crushed season 3 of Ozark. I wrote that he should have won the Emmy for best supporting actor and didn't even get nominated. I wrote about that at the big lead. I thought that was a tragedy. He responded to the article, was very nice about it. But he's rapidly becoming one of my favorite actors. I think he is phenomenal in everything he is in, and he elevates everything he's in.
I couldn't agree more. And now it's like, well, this is inspired casting. It's one of those things where, similar to Ray Sehorn that same year, I was like, oh, we're going to see in a couple years Tom Pelfrey starring in everything. And I've yet to see Ray Sehorn starring in everything, but you're starting to see Tom Pelfrey, get those roles and hopefully, you know, more and more roles. And, you know, the other thing that we're seeing pop up more and more often, Brian, is we're seeing movie stars attach themselves to these projects. I feel like this is becoming an important resume plank in modern Hollywood, is that, yeah, you had a big budget movie in the last 3 years, but you are also attached to a major streaming platform's prestige television project.
Yeah. And I think that what's interesting is a lot of times when stars attach themselves to stuff, it's a pre-written, you know, it's a novel that was a hit. It's a comic book movie, TV show, or it's, you know, it's one of the, like Oscar Isaac, Moon Knight, or they attach themselves to known properties. And so Josh Brolin attaching himself to this, something nobody's ever heard of and doesn't know the story of or whatever, was really a bold move, I thought. And it paid off. I thought he was great in the role.
Yeah. I mean, and he gets to do all of his No Country for Old Men.
Yep.
Gruffness.
He's an older version of that character, really, to some degree.
Yeah, a little behind the scenes, and it's still not spoiling. There's a big gunfight at some point, and that was actually like, I from what I read, blocks away from where his No Country for Old Men gunfight was staged.
Wow, that's awesome, actually. I didn't know that.
So that's some fun stuff. Speaking of interesting casting and casting out of hits of previous shows, also popping up quite colorfully is Noah Reed, who was, of course, one of the stars of Schitt's Creek, one of the breakout stars of Schitt's Creek, one of the guys who came on, wasn't part of the original cast and became a key character. And he plays, other than maybe Will Patton, the quirkiest of the quirky characters of the rival family, the Tillersons, and he is young Billy. What were your thoughts on Noah Reed as Billy Tillerson?
Delightfully strange, I think would be the no. And he's a guy with just an incredible voice, and we knew that from Schitt's Creek, and he's also a recording artist and all that. And so seeing a cowboy, you know, who's not really the tough. They had that really gruff brother, and then you had the clearly artsy brother whose dad, and the dad loved the artsy brother more for some reason. But, you know, seeing him just like sing random songs at times and, you know, get really just kind of out there while also maintaining kind of this stone face almost the entire time. It was really a weird like contrast in characters. He's very artsy and out there, but he was very, you know, the expression did not change. And so I thought it was a really good acting job, actually. And it was fun to see him pop up. And I, you know, he looks different in this a little bit. And, you know, just, I think it was the outfit and the hair and everything was different, but same face. He doesn't look that different, but I was questioning it was actually him for about the first episode. So, you know, that's Noah Reed. Are we sure? He's not playing somebody they don't mislabel, but you know, and then he started singing and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's the same guy. So I thought he was great. It's nice to see people you like and really love in another show come on to a second show and do something different and still be, you know, impressive in that way. So I thought he was great.
Yeah, I thought the performance was really fun.
really fun.
And you know, he certainly leaned into it, and I think his costuming was tremendous.
Everything about him was over the top, or as over the top as you could be in this Wyoming world and still be acceptable, you know, like.
I agree. And he also, you know, fits in with the absolute crazy that they show us for the Tillerson house. Like,
yes,
the kids cannot be normal.
No, can't turn out normal in that situation
with these parents. Okay. So before we wrap up non-spoilers, kind of like the things you thought were strongest first about Outer Range before we tackle maybe a couple of things we thought were weaker.
Yeah, I thought the acting was the strongest point of the show. I thought the writing at times left a little to be desired. I think that they almost lean too far into the quiet Western thing. And I don't envy them this delicate balance they were doing with it was almost Western and sci-fi at the same time. But I think that, you know, in a quiet Western mold, you don't talk very much. It's a lot of more landscapes and things like that. And a lot of, you know, unspoken communication. And I thought that that kind of clashed with the sci-fi at times, where sci-fi, you got to explain some things. And so I thought that they left a little on the table there. That was the one frustrating thing. I thought beginning, middle, and end of the episodes worked as individual stories, I thought, pretty well. And it'd always be a, sort of a lead into the next episode. But I thought that the structure was pretty good. And I thought they just sort of teased you the whole time and then came with the finale, and it all hit in the finale. I thought everything sort of hits in the finale, and you get everything. You get most of the story. Again, there's still something to be desired, but I felt like maybe the finale should have been a longer episode. Maybe made it an event finale or something, because there was so much to get to that they left hanging.
Fair. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think performance is really good. I think tone, you know, they kept the weird going consistently. Sometimes weirder than even others, and they were willing to really get into some bizarre places that reminded me of, you know, shows that I was not expecting to conjure up watching Outer Range. On that level, very strange but very fun. Interesting puzzle box that kept you guessing, and then you got some reveals through 7 and 8. Obviously not a lot. There's a lot of questions left unsaid, which
it was
very
like a lost season finale.
Yeah,
it was a lost
very lost like exactly. So all those things I would list as strengths. I'm like, part of me, Ryan, feels like this show could have been 2 episodes shorter, and another feels like it could have been 2 episodes longer. And the reason I feel that way is I feel like they tried to do a lot in the first season of Outer Range, and that means including multiple plot lines. And I think some of those plot lines worked, and some of them, at least for me, didn't work. One for me, this other son, Rhett, who's the aspiring rodeo, you know, rider, and has a love interest, but she doesn't want him to live the cowboy life. And that was like a Yellowstone storyline that was in Outer Range. And I get why they wanted to have that, but every time they got to that storyline, I wanted them to get off of it.
It was like the fourth most important storyline to deal with. And I feel like in a different show, you could make that a 2. You know, you could make that the second storyline and really explore it. But it felt underexplored. Right. It really did. Like, we never understand why he might want to leave that life. We never really get to the bottom of that. He just doesn't want to be there. It's the classic wants to leave the small town kind of thing, but we never get why. And so I thought that was underdeveloped as well.
Yeah, that aspect was a little short for me. Just in general, some of the cowboy stuff wound up being a little less interesting than what's up with the hole and what's up with Royal and why is he acting so weird and what's up with this woman, Autumn, you know, and all of this happening. And along with the more classic tightening of the vice of Deputy Sheriff Joy, and, you know, she's on the case, and obviously we know that they did it, you know, in terms of the pilot episode murder. And so, you know, is she going to catch him? When's she going to catch him? How's it going to happen? The pressure's rising, you know, all of that stuff. I found to be a little more interesting, and I'd like to figure out what the overall tone is if they have more episodes going forward, because there were a couple of times where I just felt like the show was just getting really weird. Like, why, you know, was a question I asked a couple of times. Billy and Autumn, really elaborate makeout sessions out of nowhere, seemingly.
The most awkward makeout sessions I've ever seen on television.
Yeah. And like so much so that it's clearly not, it's like both people know it's unnatural. So what is that? What's the purpose for that? So there were these little quirky moments that was kind of like, are we just being weird to be weird? Is there a reason for
it's
this?
It's intentionally but, light, right? Yeah. Like,
yeah. Right. Yeah. Is that supposed to be the funny part of it? Is everything Billy does just off in that way? Or was that a thing with the that they had, then they did the stuff. And then now it is that attracting them? And we'll get to that because we've got a spoiler wall rapidly approaching. Before we hit the spoiler wall, no one's watched, you'd say give it a whirl, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's worth a shot. And I would say hang with it. It starts to be, it's compelling from the get-go, but it starts to really kind of grab you second, third episode, I think, really. And on the surface, you know, everything that happens in the pilot is enough, I think, to grab you for a few episodes.
Yeah, concur. I recommend Outer Range. It's not going to be for everybody. There's going to be some people who are going to get weirded out. Apparently, there's one person in the world who got bored by it, which very confusing for me. Other people might feel it's overreaching or, you know, weird for weird sake, etc. But I found it to be my cup of tea with a lot of actors that I very much enjoy seeing on the screen. And as such, it became something I looked forward to the last four Thursdays when it came out. Okay, this is that point, folks. We have reached the station. It's time to get off the train unless you are ready to head out to the West Pasture and jump into that hole with Ryan Phillips and I and find out what's in there, because that's what we will explore after this break.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun, too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And as we get back here, Ryan Phillips and I were talking Outer Range. We've decided Outer Range is good. We're now going to spoil everything. First, a brief reminder that Crossing Streams, a very, very different podcast than most podcasts you may consume, because it's the kind of podcast where the episode we put up on one particular week might not be for you until 4 weeks later. And then it becomes the thing that you really need to listen to. And in particular, I want to point you to our last episode 178, where Drew Steck and I went through the final seven episodes of Ozark, the final half of the final season of Ozark. It all dropped at once on a Friday, and some people watched it all by Monday. And then some people said, I'm going to space this out. And they're watching one a week. And so right now they're two out of seven into the final season of Ozark. And if that's you, it's all good, man, because episode, or lady, or however you identify yourself, because episode 178 is waiting for you. It's evergreen, and that's the nature of Crossing Streams. Evergreen episodes discussing the shows you watch when you watch them. Maybe you haven't started Better Call Saul season six yet, and they're stacking up on your digital video recorder. Well, when you get through the first three episodes, episode 177 of Crossing Streams is right there. Ben Higgins and I
breaking everything down. Once you start watching Moon Knight, Ken Garten and I, episode 176, there to break down everything that's happened. So keep it in mind, bookmark it, subscribe here to Crossing Streams. If you Google searched us looking for Outer Range content, subscribe to the show and then check out and find out which episodes are going to be speaking to you as you go through the TV wilderness. Okay, that's it. That's all the buffering. We're now spoiling things. Royal is from 1886. Royal killed his dad when he was 8 years old in the 19th century and then jumped out and he wound up being the head of state of a ranch several decades later. I liked that twist. I enjoyed that.
I did too. And it brought back the Kronos thing from the very beginning, because Kronos was the god who took a scythe to his father and ripped a hole in the world. And Royal shot his father, a hole appears, he jumps through it, and he ends up in another reality, essentially, which is, you know, our reality, but just 80 years later or something. And so I was wondering why they did the Kronos thing at the beginning. I didn't get it. And I thought maybe it's just related to the hole, like, you know, or whatever. But to see that happen, that he's playing the role of Kronos there, is really interesting. And you wonder if that had happened before or if he literally was the cause of all of it.
Okay, this is one of the big questions that I had over the last two episodes, because when I watched episode 7, which is where Perry hears Royal's origin story and Royal reveals it for the first time, at that point, hearing the story, I thought, okay, Royal somehow creates this void, right? It was, like you said, it was the hole in his heart or it was whatever. And this is really getting into some kind of fairy tale type stuff. Right. But then in episode 8, you've got the other Tillerson kid, Luke, out there digging holes in the West pasture. And eventually he digs deep enough that he thinks he's struck oil, but it's that weird time stuff, right? The black time stuff that we've seen in the past. So now that makes me think, okay, it's the land, right? It's the actual earth that has some weird time property in it.
And I'm kind of torn on that too. I don't know if maybe Royal caused it and now the whole land is that way. You also see, you know, as Sheriff Joy follows that black trail, she must be ingesting some of it or something in some way, because then she's in the past. We assume it's the past with, you know, the Native American teepees and tents, and then the buffalo roaming. And it looks like, to me, that felt like it was the past. It didn't feel like they had shown up in the present, but we don't really get an answer there. I assume, because we didn't see that with anybody else, that she's somehow transported herself into the past, at least temporarily. And also there was a scene, she was looking for cell reception and didn't have any. I thought that was maybe the clue that, even though it's a ranch in the middle of nowhere, you might not have cell reception. But I thought that was the clue that, well, there's no cell towers in the past, you know? So I thought, again, I think I kind of wound up on that it is the land. There's something special there. And maybe the action that Royal took opened that portal for him, but that it can be open for anybody else. And I think that was proven when the brother digs and finds the memory stuff, and all of a sudden the hole starts to create there.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really confusing in that aspect. That's why I said intriguing becomes a little bit confusing, because you kind of want at least a couple more answers. Who controls it? First, we thought Royal controlled it. Then Perry jumps in the hole. Then the hole closes. Royal has no ability to open it. But then Luke digs around, and that's enough to reopen a hole. But is it the same hole? Yep. Does it go to the same place? Is it a different
hole? He was digging in the same place, I think. I think he was looking for it, as far as I could tell. But, you know, you see things happen other places with this stuff. So I don't know if it's just that, if it's the whole West pasture, you know, they keep referring to the West pasture of their land over and over and over again. And maybe that's what it was.
Yeah. I even go as far as I kind of wonder, is that whole area a little bit unstuck in time?
Sure.
You know, is all of it slightly unstuck in time? And is that a prop? Because of course we also have Cecilia running into giant bears. And then, you know, later we've got, of course, Sheriff Joy and all of the bison. So
A whole herd comes through at one point as well into the present. No, and the other one that was interesting was, and it took me a while to get this, but when Autumn and Royal shake hands, the mountain disappears because they're from two different time. Well, you reveal the big spoiler
right.
next.
Yeah, right. So that's the other thing, because the biggest reveal of the season finale after this huge gun fight, where presumably Billy is killed, and Autumn, you would think, is killed. She was trampled by Buffalo, but she's like barely alive, maybe, is that he sees the scar that we see young Amy get at the Abbott house in like episode 7, I think. Mm-hmm. And so now that means Autumn is Amy from the future, come back to the past.
Yes. And okay. That was a jaw dropper. I mean, certainly I was like, wait, what? You know, but if you go back to the beginning and rewatch it, I bet you'll find that obvious, because she shows up on the land with no explanation, really wants to stay there. She says to Royal, it always said, I don't remember anything before I'm 9 years old. She says that to Royal at one point. So clearly she had heard him say that and was just trying to, you know, she's about that age when she disappears. I mean, you find that out obviously later, but I think there were some clues along the way. She knew a lot about that family. And I'm thinking like, well, maybe they're famous. Maybe she researched them online or whatever. Turns out she was just there for all of it. And so that was certainly one of those things where you look back and you're like, I bet they gave that away the entire time. And we just had no way to consider it, you know?
Yeah, no, I this is probably a show that would suffer well for a second viewing. And if I only had, you know, seven shows not stacked up right now that I need to catch up on, I would probably dive into that second viewing, because you'd probably find a lot. And there's probably a YouTube video of somebody who's found 52 context clues, you know,
all the breadcrumbs.
Right. From Outer Range, and good on you, whoever you are that created that content. Maybe you'll get my click later in the week. But I mean, that was fun. And yeah, this show is definitely playing loose with the whole, like, if you go back in time, you're going to change time. You could end time, or, you know, end your own existence or whatever, because Autumn's trying to kill Royal. Royal's trying to kill Autumn. I just don't know what happens if either one of them succeeds.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I don't. And you've seen, you know, you see a couple times Royal seeing his own death, you know, and so that part was intriguing to me. It's like, I mean, it could still happen that way, because he survives the show, but we don't know. He might die like that, you know, eventually in the future. It just wasn't, they keep leading you to believe that's going to be his end on the show. And it isn't. It could be his end in 5 years, you know? But yeah, there were all these little hints about the future thing. And you saw what happened when they did touch, that mountain disappears. You assume it's because in the future, we've seen there's a mining company on it. Maybe they've knocked the mountain down to mine all this, you know, time traveling dust or whatever it is, sludge that we don't know about. And then in the beginning, there's a meth head in a car who says that his friend disappeared for 8 seconds, or brother or something disappeared for 8 seconds and then showed back up. Well, Royal and Autumn shook hands in the first episode too, when she showed up. So maybe that same thing happened. We just didn't get as big a viewing of it. But then, you know, things keep happening in this that are just like, it's interesting. Like, I remember seeing the bison with the arrows in it. Like, who's shooting arrows at a bison now? And it apparently, obviously, that must have come from the past, I guess. A lot of questions, Craig. A lot of questions.
Yeah, the bison showed up too many times for me to not get any explanation. I was like, oh, and there's our old buddy, the bison.
He's just roaming, just hanging out.
Yeah, with his arrows hanging off of him. And then later, Billy had a bow and arrow, and I was like, oh, okay, he's going to shoot the bison, and then it'll fall through the hole or something, you know? So at least at least something will happen. No, the bison just wanders around. It's just there. It's just hanging out. I keep waiting for a cowboy to be on top with one lonely tear or something. I don't know. That was weird. That was really weird. And it was another, you know, Sheriff Joy, right? What's going on with Sheriff Joy? She's been our voice of reason. She's been the one person trying to figure things out. I feel like the show's designed for you to root for her a little bit. right? And that whole last episode, she's out there. Where is she? Is she in current time? Is what's going on up that mountain? And how is that going to affect her investigation? Because she's got an election to win, but she's also got clearly an investigation that's going sideways right now.
Well, and what kind of struck me too is, you know, they put up the farm, you know, or the land to get Perry, bail Perry out of jail. Perry, knowing that, dives into the hole, essentially screwing his family over.
Yeah.
Because now they're going to lose the land if he doesn't show up in court. And now, as we've seen in the future, this conglomerate and maybe even Autumn can take over, or the Tillersons can take over the land if they want, you know, at auction. So that kind of, you know, given how protective Perry was over his family and he confessed to the murder, that didn't play for me. Is, you know, he's accepting responsibility for it and he's protecting his family, yet now he's going to jump in the hole and disappear because we don't know why. Maybe because there's a better life somewhere else. You know, his wife's missing or whatever. His daughter's
well, that's
still
it.
There.
He thinks he can meet his, he can find his, yes, his wife if and, he jumps into that hole.
And fair enough, but he's also screwing the family over that he was trying to protect. So it was kind of a weird motivation there for me. That was a question I had too. You get no explanation. He doesn't say like, hey, you know what? I've got to go find my, you know, I forget it was Rebecca. I think it was his
yeah,
wife's
I think
name.
Rebecca is right. Yeah.
I've got to go find Rebecca and, you know, dive in or something. He just goes and kind of leaves them hanging, which was really kind of, I was kind of like, oh, I liked Perry. Kind of a dick move. Like, yeah, you know, yeah. It's so.
Then again, Royal was thrown in the hole and he turned up a couple days later.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not necessarily 80 years later. It could be a couple days. Can Perry still find his court date to be determined in a season two? But yeah, it's kind of hinted at that they would lose the land based on the flash forward from the second episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And and it clearly that's going to come to pass. I mean, it appears as if that's going to come to pass. That is, the prophecy has been fulfilled.
Right. Right. Okay. I've got two notes for the show.
Okay.
And the first, I'd like to start with the first because this is now a 2 week in a row motif. And let's see how long I can keep this running, which is my least favorite trope in modern television, the digging holes trope, that one man or one woman can dig a hole big enough that they can put their entire body into over the course of an evening without basically killing themselves along the way. It happened in Ozark. It was ridiculous. It happens in every show. It's ridiculous in every show. And oh my gosh, the holes that were dug in this show in the last couple of episodes. Cecilia Abbott digs a giant bear-sized hole. No, 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 no.
These are rough and tumble crew, people who grew up on a farm, Craig. They can do it.
Construction crew, heavy equipment, a week, several hours to a week. Okay, we'll get you the size hole that you are digging there. Same thing for Luke, digging like ridiculous sized holes. If it was sand, you might be able to dig a hole like that. Not the hard packed pasture. You know, no chance. Give me a break. Everyone's digging too many holes. don't worry. Agreed. I'm going to point this out in every show the rest of the year when people dig graves in like a minute. You know, yeah. James the Grave Digger on Survivor had arms the size of my legs. You know, like you have to be really, really strong to dig graves, like incredibly, incredibly strong, not the size of Lily Taylor, but I digress. My other thing was, and we talked about him before the spoiler wall, I really like Noah Reed. I really enjoyed the quirky performances, and I thought they put in four too many karaoke songs.
I agree.
They never really linked that to anything. We never even got to see like some family karaoke thing or something. It was just really to me like Noah Reed can sing. We were Amazon, based on Amazon Music. We have the rights to sing any song. So if he wants to sing hard or he wants to, you know, whatever, he can do that. So we're going to make sure he does it. And like turning it into a musical randomly didn't work for me.
Yeah. I liked him singing those songs as far as like how it sounded. It was pleasant. He's very good. but it didn't really advance the plot at all. You know, there was nothing like, well, he tried out to be a singer and he failed and, you know, he's obsessed with it. You know, there's nothing about the character other than his quirkiness that played into that. And the fact that no Reed can sing, like, you know, it just felt, you're right, it felt off. You know, once or twice is fine, but it seemed like every scene started with him, that he's in, started with him singing.
Does Noah Reed have a rider in all of his contracts?
Gotta sing.
I must perform 5 songs or else I don't even show up.
5 songs over the course of 8 episodes, no less. Jam them all in the last episode if you want. It's fine. It's got to hit 5.
Right. Yeah. If you need me to do a concert in the season finale.
Yeah.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that. Honestly, it looked like they blew out his throat. Even if he survived, Billy Tillerson's singing career appears to be completely over.
It's like, finally, God. All right. Don't think he's coming back as a singer.
All right. What would you like to see the most if we do get a season 2 of Outer Range?
I want to see, I mean, obviously the relationship between Royal and Autumn is going to be fascinating because they tried to kill each other. And then she obviously knew that's Grandpa and she was still trying to kill him. And he right. now knows that's granddaughter. But also the family, this was essentially, ostensibly at its base, it was a family show. Story about a family. And all the weirdness and everything, it's a story about a family that is trying to hold it together. And the family is broken apart. You know, one son is gone into the hole. One son is running off with his girlfriend. The granddaughter has run away with her mom. They don't even know where she is because they don't know that the mom showed back up. And right. then now this woman who is a stranger to them ostensibly is their granddaughter in their house, possibly half dead. So the exploring those family dynamics, what's going to happen in the future would be fascinating to me because I don't think the two sons are coming back from where they're going. Maybe they have some reason to be pulled back. I don't know. But that's interesting. I want to find out, you know, Sheriff Joy, I want to see her on another case. Certainly. She was fun to watch operate. And I want this family dynamic. Now, one of the brothers is dead. The father is incapacitated and on the Tillerson side, like, what happens there? Is this rivalry still there? Do they still want the land? Are they just going to mine it for money now? Like, what is the end game for them as well? So that's what I'd like to see. I think that family dynamic is what worked best on this show because there were areas you could relate to with dealing with your family. And I think that's why shows based on family stuff are so popular. I thought the weirdness was fun. I'd love to explore that deeper. But that family dynamic of the Abbott family falling apart, I think, is the most fascinating thing moving forward.
Yeah. And you did mention the Sheriff Joy character, Tamara Podemski. I like her a lot. As an actor, she's good. The last thing I'd seen her in was Run from a year before on HBO, but she's been in a few things. She's a Canadian actress, but really, really good, I thought, in this particular episode. She's striking on the screen too, you know, she cuts a good figure for the character. So I'm with you. I mean, I want a couple things more explained, but I definitely just want to make sure that they find that vibe and find that quirk, kind of hit their level stay there. You know, like I like this show. I like the weirdness of it. I like the unexpectedness of it. As we all know, Lost is both a visionary and cautionary tale, right? And so a show like this, I really hope they've got not the answers I demand, but answers that are going to make sense and be satisfying in a way to roll that out that allows us to know why we took this journey. You know,
totally. And you don't have to answer every question. You know what I mean? But you have to, like, maybe round it out a little more rough, you know, smooth out some of the edges of what we were given at the end there. Again, I could have done another 20 minutes on that finale. I thought they could have fleshed out some of those storylines on the board.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I could have either used 80 minutes less or at least 20 minutes more.
Yeah, because they kept packing in things that you had to figure out, you know? And yeah. I agree. There were some slow parts of some episodes that could have chopped, you know? And but I all in all, I'm with you. I liked it and it kept me interested. which there's so many options out there these days. Keeping the interest is the most important part. And it did keep my attention and kept me interested and kept me wanting to know what was next.
Okay, let's wrap up with our what we're watching recommendation segment. And these days, I mean, I can't even imagine how you're keeping up, Ryan. We've got NBA playoffs, we've got baseball going on, and we've got every single prestige show in the world trying to get out before the Emmy deadlines.
So I am so bogged down with work and watching sports, and between NHL playoffs, NBA, and baseball, I have, and like you being busy, I have fallen behind. I finished Ozark last night. So that's what I've been watching. I finally finished Ozark, and I have been sporadically rewatching The Last Kingdom because I know it finished. I watched the finale, and then there's a lot of things in that that sort of flash back to the beginning. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to rewatch this because I watched that over 5 years or 6 years or whatever it was. So I'd forgotten so much from the beginning. So I was rewatching that. I'll probably finish that now that I'm done with Ozark and move on to the next thing. But that's why I tune into Crossing Streams, Craig, is to find out what to watch next.
Appreciate you, brother. I appreciate that. So a couple of the latest things that I haven't talked about, I don't think on the podcast. I Love That For You is a new comedy on Showtime starring Vanessa Bayer that I watched the first couple episodes and I very much enjoyed. The premise being a early mid-30s woman who really hasn't done anything, who was a childhood cancer survivor, gets a chance to be on a home shopping network and leverages a lie that she currently has cancer into broadcast success.
Okay.
Which then turns into also a workplace comedy where Molly Shannon is the star of the home shopping network. And one of the stars of Black-ish is the president of the network. And it's got a really fun, you know, ensemble workplace comedy vibe slash Vanessa Bayer's very funny, very big, broad performance. So that's fun. I had two recommendations I gave on Ben and Woods on my weekly radio segment this morning. So both of these actually are perfect palate cleansers. Okay. Because after this, I'm going to list you all of the prestige TV podcasts that we're going to do in the next 2 to 4 weeks. And that's a lot of watching. And sometimes you need a show, you know, that just isn't, well, I need to go back because there's 6 seasons over 5 years. And this, they're referencing this thing from season 1, episode 7. And I need to go, you know, I need a Wikipedia in order to follow along.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just want a show that you can put on and enjoy, and then it's over and you're done with it. And I've got two of these that are very different. Okay. One is the newest Star Trek iteration, which is Star Trek Strange New Worlds on Paramount Plus. They've got 2 episodes out right now. And it is basically just like Star Trek, the original series, but 20 years before, or maybe not even 20, like maybe 5, 10 years before.
Is that Anson Mount?
Correct. As Pike.
I will watch that dude in anything after Hell on Wheels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Played one of the great underrated badasses in television history in that show.
Well, you will very much enjoy Anson Mount as Captain Christopher Pike. And Ethan Peck, who's Gregory Peck's grandson, plays Spock, and both looks like Spock and also kind of looks like Gregory Peck. And so that's wild. Rebecca Romijn is the number two on the or number one, you know, number one, yeah. Come to the bridge, number one. So, you know, she's the second in command. And then there's like a young Uhura. There's a young Kirk, you know, they've got, so it's fun. It's got retro style to it because it's really got kind of like that 50s, 60s style. But also the production has been very slick. But what I really like is that it is like the original Star Trek series in terms of like each episode is visit a new world. Here's the new problem. Solve that problem in 45 to 50 minutes, you know, some you know, we can have a little storyline with Spock. We can have a little storyline with Pike. We can have a couple of things that are percolating over the course of the series, Justified style, but otherwise it's kind of like, okay, this week we're on this planet. Next week we're on this planet. Come fly in 45 minutes, turn your brain off, enjoy it, leave. You don't have to carry 16 plot points in your head, you know, to be able to decipher 7 episodes ahead. So Star Trek Strange New World so far, so good. The other one, which is really quirky, but especially as I think a family recommendation, is called Old Enough. And it's on Netflix. And this is a Japanese broadcast television show that's been on the air since 1990. Okay. And they've curated kind of a best of. And I think the Japanese title is old enough to understand. It's available. Each episode is like 10 minutes long, Ryan. Okay. And what these episodes follow are toddlers, 2 to 4 years old, going on an errand for the first time completely alone. So mom sending their 9-month-old boy to walk almost a mile to the store to pick up udon noodles and to pick up a particular thing, you know, like pick up 3 or 4 things from the grocery store and come back walking city streets, you know, talking to the grocery store clerk. And first off, the kids are so cute, right? And the show is delightful and it's so fun, but it's also a look inside Japanese culture that is fascinating because this is a part of their culture, developing independence in children and responsibility in children at very, very young ages that is celebrated. And the show celebrates it while also poking fun at it in really fun ways. And it's a joy. And like myself, my wife, my 10-year-old son, we must have watched like 6 episodes back to back to back sitting on the couch last night, just grooving through it and laughing at, and also it's sometimes just going like, wow, it's a very different culture where you would let a child be alone on a city street or cross a street or interact with strangers and not be terrified, right? Of an abduction or an injury or an accident or anything.
Yeah. I mean, that is pretty wild to think about it. I don't know. It's an intriguing description. I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah. Fun. Give it a look. I mean, it only takes 10 minutes to watch an episode and decide whether you like it or not. So, everybody check out Old Enough on Netflix. All right. That brings an end to episode 179 of Crossing Streams. But now that the soccer season is over, we are going to be needing to go into double time production because I've got some fruit that's getting overripe that we need to discuss. So coming up, I think our next episode will be a big Atlanta catch-up episode with John Browner because I am way behind and we've got a lot to talk about. But we might even just wait one more week and do the rest of the 4th season. Winning Time just wrapped up and the great Chappelle from the Rob Has a Podcast Network is going to come along and we're going to talk Winning Time. Dan Hayes, former beat writer here in town for the Padres, who now writes for the Athletic covering the Minnesota Twins. He and I are talking about Slow Horses on Apple TV Plus. That's coming up. RJ's Fro is back for us to talk about Barry. Paul Reindl is coming back for us to talk about Hacks. Liddy LaRie will be back for a wrap-up of Pachinko, which I still think is one of the best shows on television, and yet I've fallen behind on it. And in all of that, in 2 weeks, the half season of Better Call Saul will be over, and Ben Higgins will be back, and we will do a comprehensive look.
You're going to be busy, Craig. 7.
That's a lot, right?
A lot.
I mean, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's 7 podcasts I just talked about.
It's crazy. So,
you know what the next month is going to look like. And then watch, there'll be 2 other shows that I don't even know right now that we're going to have to jump in, that are going to jump the line. That's just the nature of this crazy, crazy TV world we live in. But Ryan, every time you're on, my friend, it's a pleasure.
Always a pleasure being here, Craig. You know, I love you and congratulations to you and the Sockers. Obviously, growing up here, I was a huge fan. I watched all of your broadcasts on Twitch over the last couple of weeks, cheering on the boys. And I'm so happy for you to go back to back and let's make it 3 next year.
Let's go, baby. 6 rings now are going to be up on the mantle here at the house. It's not a bad feeling, you know? Not bad.
I saw your slip and slide, buddy. It looked great.
There was too much slip and not enough slide, unfortunately. Looked too much padding on the front. Slowed me down. I need to lean up over the summer. But that's a story for another day. All right. For Ryan Phillips, I'm Craig Elston. Thank you so much. You made it to the end of episode 179 of Crossing Streams. Give us that 5-star review on the way out. Do us a favor. Give us that 5 stars and a little written review that allows someone else to find the podcast. We will talk to you next week with 1, 2, or 3 of all of these shows that we've got lined up. Until then, for Ryan Phillips, I'm Craig Elston. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your weekend.